I'm interested in why your parents decided to come to California and to Long Beach.
My father was what they call a gentleman farmer in England. He raised hops and cherries. And he had a man who worked for him who came to Glendale. Why that man came to Glendale, I don't know. But he corresponded with my father to tell him about the experiences. And my father had a very bad year. Both crops were not good. And Mr. Galvin wrote him that with that big family, you better come out to California because here public education is free. And in England, of course, the people in his class would have to pay for each child in school, which is an expensive thing. So in the second year the crop failed, he sold and came out. And at first, I don't know why they came to Long Beach. I really don't know exactly why. But they stayed at, they had a place on 10th and Atlantic. Where St. Mary's Hospital is now. And to let you know how country it was in that time before the 1900s, they couldn't find Anne once, and she was asleep in the weeds on 10th Street. It finally found her. But then he was looking around, and this five-acre ranch, which had fruit trees producing and I don't know what else, had a big, had a house. And when the man found that father had cash to pay cash, he just clinched the deal right now. Just gave, let father have everything, you know, just, no, just, and he left town. Well, of course, it was all a legal transaction with father and the man. But afterwards, father found that the reason he left in such a hurry and gave father such a good deal was that he owed a lot of people money and he got out of town before they caught him. But of course, it was not, nothing on father. But it was a very good ranch, and then when we had pigeons, so that was what we produced there on the ranch. And then, of course, Tom bought the Long Beach Milling Company, which was on Appleton, and then moved out to Long Beach Boulevard. And
did your father work in that with Tom?
No, my father never worked. Of course, he was old at that time, you know, by the time he got into Long Beach. He took care of the garden, you know, I mean, the kitchen garden. He was a specialist on that. One thing I remember about, he liked to have chives, and he worked out exactly the right length of a row of chives. When the chives first came up, he started cutting them, and by the time he got to the end of the row, they would be coming up again here. So the all summer long, he had chives in his palace, much to one of my sister's dislike, because sometimes the chives are a little strong. But, he was, of course, I never remember my father as anything but an old man.
My mother said the same thing about her father. I think she was maybe 60 years old when she was born. She was the youngest of about eight children. And she always followed him as an old man.
Uh-huh. Well, of course, father had a beard, too, a full beard. And of course, Tom, we had a hired man, always had a hired man to do the heavy work on the ranch. And of course, Tom was in the mill. And then when, my brother-in-law Oscar was in the mill with him. And then Frank, sometimes, part of the time was in the mill. But then Frank became a chiropractor and then a man who was a health healer or faith healer or something but who couldn't get a license to operate, offered Frank a fabulous sum if he would let him operate under Frank's license. So Frank quit the chiropractic business because people were getting equipment, and he thought, well, you know, I'm not going to sell my soul. And so he quit that, and then he went into the recreation department and was head of the city part of the recreation department for some time. And Edward, of course, was city engineer until he died.
I read that he had been one of the founders of the Signal Hill Tennis Club.
Oh,
was that a very big organization?
No, it was just, but they had wonderful times. They just really had wonderful times playing tennis. And we were so enthusiastic about tennis that we even leveled off a piece of our ranch and had a tennis court. Well, it was just a dirt tennis court, but we had good times. And, of course, the town, you know, it's interesting. As I say, they thought that 16th and Atlantic was too far out for anybody to build a school and expect anybody to go out to it. But when I remember going to a school at 8th and American, I used to cut across lots and there'd be cows parked in them, you know, and everything. You know, it was just country. And then now, of course, way reaches way out north and west and east, so that it's quite a different town. Of course, it's, along with everything else, you're just too bad that the streets of Long Beach aren't safe anymore. Yeah. The way it's just.
One thing I'm interested in is about the discovery of oil on Signal Hill. Since your family's property was pretty close to all that, were you affected by the oil
development? No. One thing, to show you how we missed. Two of my sisters bought lots in Huntington Beach. They paid $100 piece for the two lots and thought, well, we really hit the right place. They sold them for $400. And the next year they were sold for $18,000. No, we never owned any property that had any. When I was living with Violet Hess on 3740 Elm, they were going to do some drilling there, you know, so they got a permit. But they didn't find any oil, so no, our family never made money on oil.
So you were living in Arizona at the time anyhow, but I was just curious if it changed your family's way of living.
No, of course, while I was living in Arizona, they sold the ranch and built a big two-story house on Sunrise Boulevard. But that was more the death of my father, who was killed by a hit-and-run driver. He was walking to Sunday evening to church, and a kid with a car with only one light came up the wrong side of the road and hit him and left him lying there and went home and got his mother and a lawyer in another car. But in the meantime, the bus driver had found my father and had got my brother and daughter. But he was dead when they got him to the hospital. So that
was right
after the
sister Jane died.
Yes, I had come home from Arizona for my sister Jane's funeral and stayed another week because my father was killed the night before I was to go home. Mm-hmm. And so...
What was the cause of Jane's death?
Flu pneumonia.
Oh, that was that 1918 flu?
Yeah, it was real bad flu. Yeah, lots of people died in that, with that flu epidemic. Real bad. And of course, those two deaths made a big difference in our family living, and so they sold the ranch and built the big house on Sunrise. But of course, in the meantime, different sisters and brothers were married and living elsewhere. But it was really, it's interesting to see how many things have changed. Of course, I feel that I'm very fortunate to be in a place like this,
yes,
because I feel perfectly safe. But there are people who are just, well, now, of course, I guess I'm just as much a prisoner in my apartment as Evelyn is in hers, but she has a car, but she has a garage that is open and never closed, and she wouldn't dare go out at night, because...
How do you get to St. Luke's? Do you walk over now, or...?
Now, of course, on Thursdays I always walk over, and on Wednesdays I always walk over, but on Sundays, Lester O'Hauser picks me up. When for a while she didn't, because she was renting a house, and finally she got it rented to some very nice people, so she's back then. But of course, it's strange living alone in a one-room apartment after having lived in a family of 14. Of course, there were never 14 children together. Because one little child died in England, but we were a big family, and then of course the last time I was with my family were the four of us sisters. Now it's strange, my birthday's in December, Ivy's in January, Anne was in February, and Josephine's was in April, and when we four were living together, there was 4 years difference for me. When I was 80, Ivy was 84, Anne was 88, and Josephine was 92. Josephine lived to be 95, but then when she died, Anne had died before, and then when Josephine died, Ivy couldn't stay alone. So she's in Athens. She'll be 91 in December. In January.
How is she?
Well, pretty well. She is not too steady. Once in a while she trips and falls, but we all agree that it's better for her to run the risk of falling than to be tied in a chair, so... So, but she gets along, and...
Are you two the only ones left?
We're the only ones left of the family.
When did your brother Frank die?
A couple of years ago. Yeah. And, do you know the Long Beach Review?
Yes.
Well, there's a big article about Frank.
Yes, I have a copy of it right here.
Uh-huh.
And the one thing that interested me was his family picture here. It looks like he just got on the wall.
Yes.
Of all of you there.
Yes. When Frank, I think Frank was about 2 and a half there, Mother decided that she would like a picture of the family. She was sure she was not going to have any more children. And so she wanted, while we were all together, she wanted to have a picture of the whole family. It's all there except the baby that died in England at the age of 2 and a half. And so she went to, this of course was years ago, some 70, more than 70 years ago, and so she went to the photographer, I don't know his name even, but told him what she wanted. And when he heard the number of the family, he said, "Would you come down on Thanksgiving Day? Then I could lock the place up and not have anybody expecting any service from me." So that's what he did. We went down on Thanksgiving, and the place we were all, that, and he did a pretty good job of getting that big group of people together.
I think it's a beautiful picture.
And,
I spotted you. This is you.
Yes, right. I nearly flipped the time that in the church, Clovis Putney, see the to that part of the picture on the screen that showed my father and mother and me, and then the pictures you've taken of me and on the calling ministry one time, he wanted to get a picture of me. Oh, and it was strange. It was while I was living with my family, I didn't go out to the church meetings because I wasn't well enough to go. So the first time I went to this annual meeting, here was this, all these pictures of me thrown on the screen. I thought, whoa, really was timed pretty right to get all that in. But
did you have this at St. Louis while you were still teaching, or did you get more active after you retired?
I got more active after I retired because teaching is a pretty heavy job, and we were raising a girl who got lost at the Episcopal Sunday School and panicked on that, so we put her in another Sunday school. And the teacher that I was with was an Episcopalian, and I can't even remember what I did. But anyway, when I retired, I started the Midweek Fellowship. And
tell me how you started the Midweek Fellowship.
Well, who the person was, but they had started a senior citizens group at the Presbyterian Church, the Anchor Club, I think they call it. I'm not sure. And at the Congregational Church, they had one. And a friend of mine, as I said, I don't even remember who it was, said, the Episcopal Church ought to have one. So I went down to the Presbyterian Church and talked to them, and to the Congregation Church and talked to them, and talked to Mr. Bellis about the possibility of starting one. And so we called a meeting in the guild room. This is the old guild room, yeah. You know, next to the church. And told what we were interested in. It was purely for fellowship. And 20 people signed up. And until the government started these senior citizens lunch places, we got up to where we had to say nobody can come in except they're members of St. Luke's. Mm-hmm. Because it got to be 90, and you know, by the time you have to cook for 90 people, that's really a job. But now, we only run about 40, because, you know, these senior nutrition sites, they call them sites, I don't know why, but anyway. They really put on a very good meal, and if you go there every Monday through Friday, well, you get acquainted with people, and so that it meets the needs of the people. But the people who belong to Midweek Fellowship still seem to, yeah, they're over there so anxious to have it start again in September when they've been out close for the summer. But
it's more than just having lunch together, though, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a chapel service, and then there's cards. But sometimes we do have, we have the police come sometimes and talk about protecting ourselves, and I know that we had Scan talk to us, and we've had people talk about making wills or rent control problems and so on and so forth. But they really enjoy, and the thing of it is, the emphasis is on fellowship. And I think that a lot of people are lonely,
yeah.
And they want to get with somebody who they feel really cares. And they're really good scouts, you know, that we have some Roman Catholics who have been regular attendants for a long time. And in fact, one time, a woman was unable to live alone anymore, but she was a member, and she wanted to know if her daughter could bring her. And I said, oh, yes, absolutely. Well, after the daughter brought her a few times, she came to me and she said, well, if I come every time with my mother, I ought to join, pay my dues. So she did. And then a little while later, she came up to me one day and she said, you didn't ask for anyone for the cake for next time. And I said, well, I was going to ask Lena Herman, but she wasn't here today. She said, well, then ask me.
And they're
very, very willing. They know that it's a nice place, and of course, if they bring you cake, they don't have to pay for their lunch. So that.
What does the lunch cost now? I remember it started out at 50 cents.
No, it's a dollar now.
Uh-huh.
And of course, we have to watch out and see that we keep going. But so far, we haven't had to raise the. Of course, it's a lot easier to collect a dollar than it is to collect a dollar and a quarter or a dollar and a half. So.
So you also were instrumental in starting the car ministry, weren't
you? Yes. Well, they really had callers before, but I don't know what caused me to get into that, but of course, one thing that the women of St. Luke's voted $60, I think, for the callers to take gifts to the people. Well, you know, most of those people, there's nothing that you can get them that they really want or need.
The people that are shut
in hospitals and so on. So I asked Mr. Bellis what he would think of us buying potted Easter lilies for the church and taking them to the sick. And he said, well, it'd be worth trying. And after that first time he got the Easter lily, he said, Kathleen, you start something, you can't stop, because those people are so thrilled with an Easter lily from the church when they have their Easter communion. And then when Father Young came to the church, he said, well, you know, there are a lot of people at Christmas, you know. So then we started the poinsettias, so that that's been my job since then, is to work to get the sales going and get the money for the flowers. Fortunately, we've had people that belong to St. Elizabeth's who've left us money in their wills, and or relatives of the people have made donations in memory of the person. So far we've been able to pay the bills, and the bills, of course, keep getting higher.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to be.
Well, over the years you've seen lots of clergy, different clergy in St. Louis, and I know you had a very close relationship with Bishop Gooden.
Yes, it was interesting. Of course, Bishop Gooden was the rector of St. Luke's, but I remember when I came back as a sophomore from college,
mm-hmm.
He said to me, Kathleen, remember, you'll never again think you know as much as you think you know now. I remember that very distinctly. And then when I came to live with my sisters, I had a car, and I said, they had kept in touch with Bishop Gooden, and I said, wouldn't it be nice to go up and see him in Glendale? And so he called, and that first time I went up there, and I said, could we take you out to dinner sometime? And he said, just name the day. And so from then on, we took Bishop Gooden out once a month, every month, from that time on until he died. And except twice. Once he was going to be gone in England for a whole month, so we gave him some money and told him to take his son, the bishop, out to dinner in London on us. And then one time, we had the appointment for the last Friday in the month, and he called Thursday night and said, I can't go out to dinner with you tomorrow because there's a funeral that I have to attend. But other than that, every time, and even 2 weeks before he died, almost 102, you know, we take him out to dinner.
How many years was that then?
Over 10.
Uh-huh.
So that meant a whole lot to us. And,
yeah.
And it meant a lot to him, too, because when his oldest daughter's husband retired, he told them that they could stay at his house until they found a place they wanted to buy. And that Friday when they came, the daughter said to me, you know, my father said, the members of my first parish come up once a month on Friday to take me out to dinner. Nothing can interfere with that.